IMAP is a protocol for connecting to your mailbox and working with messages in your mailbox. We know already that the protocol is also one of the very old protocols, and so that the authentication was additionally added to it, and mostly it's done the authentication via SSL or TLS. So either there is a server running on a special port for IMAP-S, or the client can connect to normal port and then ask the server by start TLS command to start encrypting. And the difference between IMAP and BOP is that IMAP is much better in working with particular mails in the mailbox. It can work with the mailbox with the mail as a structure, as MIME structure, so it can work with part, with only portions of the mail, not with the mail as a whole. And it's also possible to do some operations on the server, which is not the case of POP. POP can only download the mail, or that's all. So the work with the mailbox is much more sophisticated comparing to POP. So that's the reason why IMAP is currently more supported than POP. You can search for some mails in the mailbox, so you need not to download them and then search, and you can work with several mailboxes and some other extensions. So the only thing that IMAP and POP, neither of them can serve you is sending mails. So if you want to send a mail, you still must connect via SMTP protocol to a server, either the same or some other server, and use SMTP for sending the mail, which is a little bit surprising because in my opinion, there is no reason for that. If IMAP is able to transport mails from server to client, it could be also able to transport mails in the opposite direction. And so it could be possible to use it for sending, but it's no such extension was no such new version that can do and can support this is developed. So then we moved to web. We talked just very shortly about HTML because you will learn much more later in the second part of this course with Clara. So we only know that we only remind that HTML is a language that can describe both the contents and not only text but also some relations between pages and so on, and pictures and so on, and also the format, so you can specify which is title, which is a paragraph, and several kinds of lists and so on. So the documents, the web pages, web documents are written mostly in HTML, and the clients downloads the source codes, the text in this language, in this markup language, and try to display somehow the content. And of course, the result is dependent on the client. Not only on the author, but also on the client, because the client can express different things by different means. Different clients can do this in different ways. So the page, the the protocol HTTP, which is used for transporting pages in the web system, is designed so that the client makes a request and server responds with a document. Standard in the first contact to the server, it will typically be the HTML page, HTML document, and if this document contains some more objects, for instance, images, and maybe included part of HTML or audio or video parts and something like that, then the client must make another request for each of these parts. So the question in the summary is, what happens if you have two embedded images in the page? So then in total, the client must do three requests to the server. And we also told that it's typical that the browsers now, when you open a page, then the browsers very often open several connections so that they will be able to download as many additional objects, additional images and pages as the showing, displaying the web page requires. And we also thought that in the HTTP 1.1, you can use a persistent connection so that you can make a connection, the client can make a connection, and then send several requests using the same connection. It's not necessary to close the connection after each request. There is a set of the most important HTTP methods on the slide you have in the presentation, and generally it's important to know the basic behavior of and aim of the methods. The most common and most often used method is GET. GET means that you have a URL and your client requests getting the document represented by this URL. So the client sends a GET request with URL, and the request has no body because this is just the URL and some additional information in the headers of the request. But the body is not needed, so there is no body in this moment, in this kind of request, and the server responds either by an error response, which is common for all these methods, and in this case the body of the response contains a text of HTML page explaining the problem. And if the request succeeds, then you will get in the response the document. Very similar method, but not used so often, is method HEAD. The only difference is that you will not get the document itself. You get only the headers. And the reason is to get some information from headers. For instance, in which languages the page is available, in which encoding, what's the age of the page, what's the length of the page, and so on. So you can prepare and maybe judge whether to download it or not. The next method is POST, which is a way how to send some additional data to a server, so send some parameters, and to get some document. The difference between GET and POST is that in both cases, you can send, for instance, a data coming from an HTML form. So you have an HTML page, there is a form, the user fills the fields in the form and then tries to send the data from the form to the server. There are two possible ways how to do it. One is using get method and one is using post method. The get method uses for adding the parameters from the or the fields from the form, the URL form. So you know that in the URL there is a part called query, and in the query part it's possible to encode in the form keyword equal sign value to encode the form. The same can be done using a post method. The only difference is that the parameters are not in the URL, which is good, for instance, for password, that you don't have the password in URL, but the parameters are sent a special formed body of the request. In both cases, you could get a document from the server, but the important thing is that post method is, in the contrary to the get method, is not safe and not idempotent. What these two terms there means? A method is safe if it changes nothing on the server. This is safe method. So you can only download information. The get request is safe. So it means that you should not make an application that via get request, you change something on the server. If you want to change something on the server, you should use the post method. Of course, the get method will probably change something on the server, because if the server counts some, makes some log, some journal, if the server counts some statistics, so there will be increased even by the get method, of course. But it's meant that the real data, the content of the server, not the control information, but the content of the server is not changed by the get method, which is not the case of post. Post could be used for changing something on the server. Idempotency means that you can repeat the same request and you will still get the same response. Each time you repeat the request, you will get the same response. So it's clear, if you repeat a get request, you will still get the same response, because nothing has changed on the server. In the case of post, you could get different answers, different responses for different attempts to send the same post request, because the post could, for instance, to increase some counter, so the next post with the next post you will get the increased value of the counter. So the next method is put, which is used for uploading documents to the server. So in this case, you will use the put method. The body has a document and the response has no page. It's just a response okay or not. And for manipulating on the server, there is also a delete method that can delete some document on the server, if you have sufficient permissions, of course. And in this case, you will get the result, which is important, which is interesting, that even the delete method is idempotent, which is means that if you try to delete twice the same document, you will still get success, because even the second attempt will be successful. You only get the in the message that the requested document was already deleted, but it still means that both attempts are successful. And the last method here is a very important method called connect. And this is a method which is very useful for application making, because you can make a special tunnel. The application can use some other kind of traffic using the channel created by HTTP. But so that's all regarding the methods, because we talked last week quite a lot about this. The last question is about cookies. The important thing is that when the client makes several requests to a server, they are in fact independent. In spite of that, it can use the same TCP connection. They are in fact independent. So the server in fact doesn't know that they are sent by the same user from the same web browser window. So the server in some situations needs to know the status of the logical connection.
HTTP gives a server no means for holding this information, so cookies were designed to allow transmitting information about the current logical dialogue.
So the idea is that the server creates some piece of data so that it can recognize next time when this piece of data comes back to the server, then the server can recognize that all these requests are bound together. They are part of the same dialogue. And then the server sends this piece of data, this cookie, sends back to the client. The client stores the cookie in the browser memory. And then each subsequent request to the same server will be sent together with the cookie. So the server can recognize the session and then continue. For instance, if you make some settings, then the server can use the same settings next time when you visit the same page. So this is the principle of cookie. So from the security point of view, there is no direct risk coming from cookies. This is not a piece of code that will be executed on your client. So no viruses and something like this. It's just piece of data. But they have secondary security issues. So if someone has access to your browser, then he or she can see your cookies, can know which servers were visited by you, and so on. And the same is valid for the servers, because if the server has, especially it's the very typical case of the advertisement banner. So if a server has an advertisement banner, then if your client sends a request for this part of HTML, for this advertisement banner, and the advertisement server sends back to the client the cookie, then the server knows from which page you came. So it can store this information. And when you visit next time some other page where this advertisement server has also the possibility to show the banners, then the server can send you specific advertisement which is somehow connected to your last request.
So collecting this additional information about users is a secondary security issue of cookies.
We talked about two protocols for remote connection. So if you have two accounts, on one on a local machine and one on some remote machine. So one of the application you want to use is connecting to the remote account and work there, or download and upload data. So for the remote connection, there is a very old protocol, Telnet, which was one of the very important protocols in the early history of internet. But again, since it is a very old protocol, it has all the problems with authentication. So it sends open password. And so it was replaced by SSH protocol. The SSH protocol, of course, must authenticate the user on the server side, but this authentication is on encrypted channel. So first, the client checks the identity of the server. It's done by keys, so the server must send a key, and the client checks whether the key is known. For the client, for the first time you logged in on the server, the key will not be known. So you as a user will be asked to check this key. And if you confirm that this key is correct, then the client continues authentication. So it starts encryption with the server and then sends your user and username and password. And all the connection is then encrypted. So the difference against Telnet is encrypted connection and verifying the server. Regarding the confirmation of the key, one important thing is that maybe it's not so important to verify carefully the key when you connect to some server for the first time, because the probability that the server is at this moment under attack is quite low. Of course, you must decide whether it's how big the risk is. So if you are connecting to some very, very important server, then it might be the problem. But if you are connecting to your colleague's computer, then probably it's not important to check so carefully the key. But what is very important, if the key changes, so if the server, if your client asks that the server has changed the key and whether you confirm this key change, then you must be very careful. It could be okay if the server was reinstalled or something like that, but it could be also a symptom of an attack. So if the server wants confirmation of new key, you must verify very carefully this change. And the last question is regarding the voice over IP protocols. So first important thing is that voice over IP is not a name of a protocol, it's just a general term for transporting voice over IP network. And there are several ways how to do it. You can use HTTP, some systems use HTTP. For instance, Zoom is also using this protocol, Skype is using this protocol. But there are also a very specific protocols dedicated only or made, designed only for voice over IP. And we talked about two groups of protocols. One is H.323, which is a very old protocol coming from the times when every bit should be saved. And the protocol is not binary, but bitwise. So it's very hard to understand the protocol. You must have some software that can convert the binary, the bitwise form to something that's just readable for you. And the H323 is a set of protocols. There are several sub-protocols for different paths of initiation of the connection. So if your phone, which is based on this technology, is trying to connect another phone with this technology, then first there are several protocols which are parts of this family to establish the data connection for transmitting the audio or video. And the initial phase of this communication, so the beginning of the whole dialogue between users is now typically made by a different protocol, by a new protocol called SIP, Session Initiation Protocol. And this protocol is text-based, so you can read what the client and server are talking about. And it has messages that are similar to HTTP messages, but it could be transported using not only TCP, but also UDP, which is not the case of HTTP. It has to be sent over UDP, over TCP, but SIP can use SIP can use both transport layer protocols. And then when the session is negotiated, when all data channels are prepared, then the data channels will transport audio data. These protocols at the lower level are the same protocols like in H323, protocols RTP, real-time transport protocol, and RTCP, real-time transport control protocol. And these two protocols are used in both because the audio data are binary, it's clear, but the negotiation, the dialogue between the two parties can be interesting for administrators and for other. So it's in SIP protocol based on a text form, so that you can read it. But still, in both cases, it's important to negotiate the data channels. And we know that with additional data channels, there are problems. We illustrated it in the case of FTP protocol, but here we have the same problem. But one advantage of SIP is that the protocol is newer, and the designers of the protocol knew that there are problems when crossing network boundaries, and so they designed a node, a role in the protocol, a role of proxy. So there are intermediate nodes within the protocol that can handle the offers of data channels, so that the data channel offers will be reachable outside of the network where they originated. So the proxy will change the information in the session description protocol, SDP, which is the protocol for negotiation of the properties of both sides of the connection, and protocol that offers socket addresses, so IP addresses and ports, and proxy is able to change the content of the SDP so that the ports and addresses are accessible for the remote side. So this is the advantage that already in design of the protocol, the proxy is included, which is not the case of FTP. Okay, the question, once more, the question about number of requests. So if HTTP client downloads the page and the page contains three images, then in total, then there will be four requests, because the first request was the request for downloading the page, and then three more requests for the pictures. The question is whether it will be in three independent TCP connections or just one persistent and three serial requests, but it's dependent on the implementation. Yeah, so as many additional objects are in the page, so as many additional requests must be sent to the server in HTTP 1. Because in HTTP 2, we told that there are big changes, especially for smooth downloading a lot of information from the server. So in HTTP 2, it's not true this, because in HTTP 2, it's possible that if a client requests a page which has two images, then the server doesn't wait for the additional requests and will send the three images immediately after sending the basic page. Because in 99% of cases, the client will continue, the browser, the client will continue and will request the additional objects, the images. So the server can save both time and connectivity to sending the additional images at the same time. Okay, question about Anycasts. Anycasts is an attempt how to manage distribution of some general information so that it could be shared with many servers in the world. For instance, you have some very famous company and you have a server with core information from the company, and you have the company in America, and so you want to have a copy of the server in Europe so that your customers do not need to use the transatlantic channel for every of the four requests for your page with three images. So you want to make a copy. So the way how it's done in IP version 4 is that you make a DNS name, and the DNS name has several addresses. And so your client makes a DNS request. He gets the set of addresses. And then the client must choose, according to the addresses, the best server for connecting from the concrete client. And it's not very easy for DNS, for the client to decide. And typical strategy of the client is not investigating any address. It just takes the first address and use it. So the typical strategy is that the DNS server, when you have more IP addresses for one name, so the order of the responses changes with every request. So if you have a DNS name, domain name, with three addresses, and you will make three subsequent requests, and there will be no other client asking at the same and the same server in the same moment, then you will get all the three addresses on the first place. So you will get all three addresses, but the order will be changed, typically rotated in each attempt. So this is not very effective, because the probability that the client will really use the European copy of the server is very low. So the idea is, in any case, is to define a DNS name with just a single IP address, but routing, to manage the routing from every client to particular IP address, so that if a machine with this IP address is in some sense closer to the client, then the client will connect this this server. So the idea is that the same IP address is shared by several or many servers in the world, and the routing is responsible for the fact that your client, if tries to connect to this IP address, then the closest server holding this address will be chosen for you. So it's sufficient, this response. Okay, you're welcome.